Welcome to episode 141 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for December 1st, 2009. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, Philadelphia continues to crack down on cyclists, and cyclists don't like it. A Wyoming man could get 45 years in a cyclist death. Lance loses another bike, and London police are on the lookout for a naked cyclist. Following the news, a follow-up interview from Interbike with SKS, an interview on strength training for cyclists, a new website called VeloKid.com, and an interview with one of those Velo kids. Plus, PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike hammer, just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast, and yes, I'm on my mobile microphone, and that's why I sound so funny today. Hey, welcome back, it's great to have you with us. This week's episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Audible. Audible is the best source for audiobooks and great audio content with over 60,000 titles, and I'll have one of those titles for you coming up later in the show. But in the meantime, to get your 14-day free trial of the Audible Listener Gold program, go to audiblepodcast.com/cycling. The show is also brought to you by listeners like you who have donated or have subscribed to the Fredcast by clicking that donate link at www.thefredcast.com, and also by listeners who are clicking those links to do their holiday shopping at the Fredcast by going to such places as Amazon, Jensen USA, Performance Bikes, and new on the page right at the top of the screen, Epic Planet, for those great Epic Rides DVDs that I've told you all about here on the show. Make sure that when you're buying those for your friends and loved ones this holiday season, you do it through the Fredcast. You'll get the same great prices, and you'll reward the Fredcast also just by clicking the links. Thank you so much. And now let's get to the news for this week's episode of the Fredcast. So last week, you'll recall, we were talking about the city of Philadelphia here in the United States, where police were going to start cracking down on what they called scofflaw cyclists. And you know me, I always talk about being good cycling citizens. But now it looks like the city of Philadelphia is beginning to take this a little bit too far. There are two bills before the Philadelphia City Council, one that would raise fines for cycling violations and expand regulations for bikes, including a mandate for license plates, and one against what they call so-called brakeless bicycles. Now, as you can imagine, this has cyclists in the city of brotherly love up in arms, including bicycle messengers who recently rallied at John F. Kennedy Plaza to protest what they called a growing, quote, anti-cycling mood in the city. According to Jorge Brito, a spokesman for the Philadelphia Bike Messengers Association, "We're here because we've got this feeling that people are against us." In addition to protesting against these bills before the city council, the messengers were also there to protest an incident which occurred on Thanksgiving morning, that would be last Thursday, in which an angry motorist ran a cyclist off of a street in the middle of Philadelphia, causing her to land on her face and suffer a broken jaw. Rachel Fletcher, who's 30 years old, is a messenger. She was hospitalized after that 2 a.m. incident on 23rd Street in Philadelphia. Looks like things are beginning to get a little bit out of hand. As always, I'll keep you posted on this story. Last week, I also talked to you about the story of the firefighter who got what appeared to me to be a very light sentence in the incident in which he shot at the head of a cyclist. And I talked about several other incidents that had to do with cars and cyclists and comparing the different sentences. Well, here's a sentence that finally makes sense. Kevin Lee Babcock of Wyoming was sentenced to 20 to 45 years in prison for a crash that killed a 19-year-old cyclist and injured another cyclist, this occurring in the state of Michigan. Get this, Kevin Lee Babcock admitted to the police that he had consumed nearly 20 drinks prior to getting behind the wheel on June 29th, hitting two cyclists near US 31 and Quincy in Holland Township, Michigan, and then fleeing the scene. Now, one of the cyclists was Curtis Jacobs. Curtis died the next day from his injuries. The second was 19-year-old Christian Van Weingarten. He was hospitalized, but he recovered. Babcock pleaded no contest to second-degree murder, operating a vehicle while intoxicated, causing death, driving without a license, causing death, failing to stop at a collision, and for being a habitual offender, because you see, Babcock has been in trouble with the law before, including a long list of driving citations before that crash in June, and convicted on four, count them, four drunk driving offenses dating back to 1986, and his license was once revoked in 1993. Before going to prison, Babcock had the opportunity to address the family, saying, quote, "I know I've caused to your family great anguish and great devastation. I'm truly sorry. I don't expect you to ever forgive me. I don't deserve it, but I'm truly sorry, and this is from my heart and from my soul for all the loss and pain I've caused you." Jacobs' father, Mark Jacobs, said, "Maybe in a way I'm a little mad. Mad at the alcoholic. Mad for driving with no license. Mad for driving with no insurance. Mad at the state for not locking you up years ago. Mad for the cost of this trial, the lawyers, and to pay for your room and board for the next 20 years. For myself, for the loss of a child who I coached in Little League Baseball, coached in Science Olympiad, and taught in the church cadet program, so bright, so smart, in college to learn and make something out of his life, and then someone stuffed out his life, selfish enough to enjoy 20 drinks of alcohol the night before. Finally, in my opinion," this is me, this is not a quote, "in my opinion, finally, a sentence that makes sense for a man who's a habitual offender who should have been in prison a long time ago. Going away for 45 years sounds right to me, but like Mr. Jacobs, I don't think it's fair that the citizens of Michigan have to pay for it." And revisiting another story we've done here on the Fredcast in the past, do you remember during the 2009 Amgen Tour of California, there was the time trial in Sacramento, Lance Armstrong's bike getting stolen out of the Team Astana truck and then getting recovered by the Sacramento PD in time for him to use that bike at the Solvang time trial later on in the week? Well, it appears Lance Armstrong, or at least the bike shop he owns, has lost yet another bike. A Team Trek Livestrong time trial bike valued at over $10,000 was stolen on November 22nd from Mellow Johnny's in Austin. And Mellow Johnny's announced this on their Twitter feed, saying, "Help! We had Trek Livestrong TT bike stolen Sunday, November 22nd, similar to the one pictured. Please retweet," and there is a picture. They then went on to say, "Stolen bike has some unique features like TT bars that were special for the team," and then they put more details in another tweet from a story that appeared in Velo News. Now, the bike is owned by Trek, and it was a Trek Equinox TTX SSL, and it was used by team member Ryan Bauman during the 2009 season. It was being stored in the same building as the bike shop. Mellow Johnny's is still looking for this bike, and if you have any details or if you want more information, go to the show notes where I've got a link to the Mellow Johnny's Twitter feed. Hopefully somebody will be able to help them recover this bike. And in our final homage to last week's show, let's talk about Team Astana. Team Astana has now been registered to race in the 2010 UCI Pro Tour calendar after the UCI approved Astana's entry. However, according to the UCI, quote, "The UCI awaits a bank guarantee and is confident that it will be provided soon." Because as you will recall, Astana did have financial issues last year that prevented it for a time from making its payroll. And as a result, the UCI has told them that they want financial guarantees this year, despite the fact that they do have a pledge worth $22 million from the Kazakhstan government. Meanwhile, the UCI did decide Wednesday to refuse the registration of Team Lamprey. And of course, that's Damiano Cuniego's team. And the reason was not disclosed. However, the UCI's License Commission will consider Lamprey's future. More details as they become available about other teams and whether or not Astana makes this guarantee and gets it to the UCI. Because if they don't, well, they're going to reconsider their license again. Meanwhile, Garmin Slipstream, Team Garmin Slipstream, has changed its name. They are now Garmin Transitions, now that they've secured a major sponsorship from Transitions Opticals, a manufacturer of eyewear, specifically their most popular product. They are one of the largest manufacturers of light adaptive lenses that darken in sunlight. So no more Garmin Slipstream. They will be Garmin Transitions. And from all indications, they will continue to wear Argyle. Talking earlier about the guy who got 20 to 45 years in the death of a cyclist, the recidivist, the repeat drunk driver who had 20 drinks before killing a cyclist. I'm sorry I have to repeat that. It's just unbelievable to me. There are inmates in California's Santa Barbara County Jail who are actually doing something great, serving the community while they're in jail. They're fixing old and broken bikes and then donating them to local charities. Now, the program began about 10 years ago, and it began with bikes that were in evidence, police evidence, that otherwise would have gotten thrown away. According to the program's founder, Sergeant Ben Castaniero, the idea struck a chord with people in the community. Ben says, quote, "We're starting to get more people that donate their bikes. If it costs less than $50 to repair it and make it safe, then we take that bike and we fix it." And what's interesting is, essentially, the inmates actually pay for refurbishing these bikes through what they buy at the commissary in jail. That, to me, is really amazing. According to Sergio Ramos, an inmate at the jail, quote, "It makes me feel good to come over here and help out. You know, because it's for the kids. And I've got kids of my own." Commander Thomas Jenkins agrees, saying, quote, "The inmates have a chance to do something for someone else, even when they're going through a difficult time in their life. And that is always a good thing." A lot of the bikes are donated to the Unity Shop in Santa Barbara and the Good Samaritan Shelter in Santa Maria. A great story at this time of year when there's a lot of families in California who don't have the money to buy bikes for their kids. Hopefully those kids will have a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, as a result of these inmates' efforts. Good job, guys. You may be aware of the law in the state of Idaho here in the United States that allows cyclists to pass through stop signs, treating them as a yield sign, and even going through red lights once they've determined that the intersection is clear, codifying what a lot of cyclists do right now, which is currently against the law in most jurisdictions. Well, the state of Utah is now considering the same type of a proposition. State Representative Carol Spackman Moss is introducing such a bill to revamp Utah's bicycle traffic laws, allowing cyclists to yield at stop signs if the intersection is clear. And there is also a possibility that Utah might consider allowing cyclists to pass through red lights after stopping, making sure that the intersection is clear, and then proceeding through. According to Representative Moss, quote, "If people want to use bikes as alternative transportation, if we want this to be a bike-friendly place, because people speak about Utah more and more and move here for recreational activities, yours truly included, we ought to make that something we should really focus on, making cycling safe." Now, Utah Bicycle Coalition President Ken Johnson, of course, supports the concept of Moss's bill because he says it would codify what's already happening at intersections anyway. He says it's a myth that allowing rolling stops at intersections will encourage cyclists to be reckless. Johnson saying, quote, "When you're rolling into an intersection, you're much more inclined to look for things that are going to hit you because you know that a collision will be very significant. And so the idea that cyclists are just going to start blazing through stop signs without even looking or caring what's going on, I think it's not true." Holiday resident, Holiday's a suburb in Salt Lake City, and recreational cyclist Dave O'Leary is the one who suggested the bill to Moss, saying, quote, "Joggers don't necessarily stop at stop signs. They kind of look both ways and then they run." Continuing and talking about motorists, he says, "I had one recently who was really irate who said, 'You cyclists always get your way.' Then I watched as he slowed down at the next stop sign and drove right through it." Utah State Senator Curtis Bramble from Provo, Utah, said he's skeptical, but will hear out Representative Moss on the proposal. Quote, I'm thinking from the point of view of riding a bicycle. If it appears the intersection is clear because I didn't see the automobile coming, does that mean it's the automobile driver's fault if there's a collision? Bramble himself was the victim of an accident while on a bike and required physical therapy for broken vertebrae. Continuing, quote, I see bike-auto conflicts from multiple perspectives, but I would approach it with an open mind. I, of course, because I live in Utah, will be following this closely, but I think that whether I lived in Utah or not, I would still be following it closely, because if Utah does adopt the Idaho-style law, it could signal a domino-falling chain, meaning that we might see this in more and more jurisdictions. Do I think we'll see this in places like Southern California or perhaps the Northeast Corridor? I do not. I think that that in places like Idaho and Utah, where you have smaller urban concentrations and more wide open spaces, I think that it's more possible that a law like this could occur. Having lived in Southern California, I just don't think it would work in a place like that. But we'll see what happens in Utah. Nobody ever said, as Utah goes, so goes the nation. But it will be interesting to see whether or not it passes and if it catches fire elsewhere. An article recently appeared in The Guardian Online in the UK, and the article brought up a subject which has come up here on the Fredcast before and something with which perhaps maybe we should revisit. The article specifically was talking about what the author called iPod zombie cyclists, specifically talking about cyclists who, quote, with earphones firmly in, lose vital clues to what is going on around them. They've been brought up as part of the Walkman or iPod generation and are absorbed in their music zone at home, on the bus or train, and even at work. According to the author of the article, they believe that your audible clues are just as important as your visual cues when you're on your bike. And the author posits, is it possible that one of the reasons why there's been a 19% increase in cyclist deaths in the 3 months to June of 2009, whether or not there is a correlation between that and the increase in iPod or simply headphone use on bicycles. Now, at the beginning of this show, every week I say, if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder. Because, of course, I mean if you're listening while you're riding your bike. And I've cautioned time and time again that it is, if you're going to listen on your bike, use only one earphone so that you can hear what's going on around you. And, of course, the Fredcast logo shows our little caricature Fredcast guy with two earphones clearly in his ears. In some places, that's illegal. In lots of places, it's definitely ill-advised. So my question to you is, what do you do? What are your thoughts about riding your bike while you are listening to audio? Do you do it? Have you had any incidents as a result? Have you had run-ins with people who are using iPods or headphones, and have they caused problems for you, whether you're walking or cycling or even just driving? The author of the Guardian article says that there is a campaign in Britain called the Think Campaign, warning against the dangers of texting while walking, and wondering whether or not they need a similar campaign aimed at people who use their iPods on the road. Well, I have a similar question. What do you think? I would love to share your thoughts here on the show. Send me an email, send me a tweet, post something on my Facebook page, send me a voicemail. We have our new voicemail line at 661-513-FRED. Send me an email with your audio comment, but communicate with me. Let me know what you think, and I'd like to share that with your fellow Fredcast listeners. It's a great question, one that people argue about time and time again. I want to hear what you think. Now, this next story may sound comical, but it is entirely serious. Police in London are looking for a naked cyclist stalking female joggers Detectives are examining a series of sightings of him close to the River Thames in Barnes. Women have seen the man either completely naked or naked from the waist down, exposing himself on towpaths and riverside roads. According to a Metropolitan Police spokesman, quote, "We're taking this extremely seriously and need to identify this man as a matter of urgency. The isolated locations that these incidents have occurred, coupled with the lone female victims, increases our level of concern." This guy is described as white and about 30 years old. If you are a cyclist in London, I urge you to be on the lookout for this individual. And if you should see him, to report that to the Metropolitan Police in London. This is a serious incident. Make sure that you're on the lookout and that you do report it. And hopefully this guy will be caught before he does more than simply exposing himself. Really scary story. And finally tonight, a story that's serious, but I'm going to poke a little fun at it anyway. Customs and Border Protection agents on the Arizona-Mexico border have recently seen a new type of smuggling going on. For instance, on November the 21st, it was reported that U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers stopped a drug smuggling attempt when they apprehended a 16-year-old boy trying to smuggle marijuana concealed in the wheels of his bicycle. On November 20th at about 6:30 p.m., Customs and Border Patrol officers were screening travelers when they observed a 16-year-old boy approaching the primary vehicle lanes pushing a bike. And the boy was identified as a U.S. citizen and a resident of Douglas, Arizona. When they searched the bike, they found both tires had been loaded with pot. The total weight of marijuana was about 3.5 pounds for an estimated street value of more than $5,300. The following weekend, Customs and Border Patrol agents in Douglas, Arizona, stopped another drug smuggling attempt when they were screening travelers the next Friday, and they observed two 15-year-old boys approaching the vehicle lanes. Each of them was riding a bike. Both were identified as Mexican nationals and residents of Agua Prieta in Sonora, Mexico. When they searched the bikes, they found that the tires of both bikes had been loaded with marijuana. The total weight was about 7 pounds for an estimated street value of more than $11,000. Now, like many of you, I read all those articles that told me if you should get a flat and you don't have a spare tube or a patch kit or a pump, that the best thing to do is to remove the tube and stuff your tire as much as possible with grass and weeds. But I don't really think that this is what they meant. And with that lame attempt at humor, here ends the news for this week's episode of the Fredcast. Now, before we go on to tonight's features, I want to talk to you about our sponsor, Audible. I've told you many times before that Audible is my choice for audio entertainment. Yes, I'm still in the middle of that very long Stephen King book, but I'm really enjoying it. But that is not my recommendation for tonight. Let's talk first about what you get when you sign up with Audible by going to audiblepodcast.com/cycling. You get a 14-day free trial of the Audible Listener Gold Program, and you get a free audiobook that's yours to keep, whether you decide to stay with Audible or not. But once you try Audible, I think you will stay with them. So go to audiblepodcast.com/cycling to get signed up today for your Audible Listener Gold trial membership. Now, my recommendation this week, I would love to recommend Lance Armstrong's new book, Comeback 2.0, but it's not yet on Audible. His other books are, but until it comes to Audible, I've got a great recommendation for you tonight. It's called Live Strong, Inspirational Stories from Cancer Survivors. The Lance Armstrong Foundation has put together, from hours of videotaped interviews, really poignant and dramatic personal accounts from cancer survivors, including the following.
We started doing research and found that there aren't any organizations designed to provide educational scholarships, professional training, and advice on rent, loans, car payments, grocery, and residual medical bills for young adult survivors. But instead of being discouraged and giving up completely, we gave up the idea of the benefit concert and just decided to go full steam ahead and create our own organization. It's called Surviving and Moving Forward. It's called the SAM Fund for Young Adult Survivors of Cancer. I feel uncomfortable saying, I'm Sam, and this is the SAM Fund, because though it did start obviously from my own story and experiences, the acronym comes from surviving and moving forward. We want to help people who are no longer receiving treatment and feel abandoned. When I was going through treatment, all the doctors and nurses were focused on getting me to the day when they would tell me that I didn't have to come back anymore. Obviously, that's a huge and important day, but then I felt that people sort of forgot about me. Being a young adult who had to go out and fend for myself and decide either to go back to school or not, or to get a job and start paying rent was incredibly overwhelming. It's just hard. It's hard for anybody right out of college. But then you add $20,000 in medical bills to it, and it makes it even harder. And so what we decided to do was create an organization just to provide financial assistance in that transitional time. So that's what I've been doing for the last 9 months. It's been the best thing in my own cancer journey because it's given me a way to reclaim control over the whole thing. To have cancer in my life because I chose to put it there, not the other way around. It's been really empowering and really exciting. I've met some amazing people. We've already started partnering with other organizations. We've done some fundraising. We're working on a whole bunch of stuff. I'm actually about to go part-time at my day job so that I can run the fund 2 days a week. I hope to make it full-time eventually. It's been interesting to see how all the pieces are now coming into place. I have this incredible energy and excitement to get this fund off the ground and hand out the first check to a survivor who needs it. For that, I'm very grateful. I just decided I'm going to start an MBA program for people involved with organizations or who want to be involved with organizations with a good social mission. Cancer isn't who I am, but it's where I've been. It's a part of who I am. And to now be able to incorporate that into a career and into a positive presence in my life makes me feel grateful.
So once again, the book is Live Strong, Inspirational Stories from Cancer Survivors. This book can be yours, or one of 60,000 plus others can be yours just by going to audiblepodcast.com/cycling. Thank you for checking it out, and thanks to Audible for their support of the Fredcast. Okay, first up in the features tonight, I've got an interview for you that's sort of left over from Interbike. It was sent over to me weeks ago by our friend and producer, Rex Anderson. He had an opportunity to stop by at the SKS booth at Interbike. He saw some stuff that was cool. He recorded this very brief interview, but I'm going to play it here because it's got some really interesting stuff for you to hear.
I'm at the SKS booth. A manufacturer from Germany that makes a lot of accessories, including fenders and bags and floor pumps. But what I'm here to look at is the frame pumps. They've got some really cool-looking small high-pressure road pumps that have something different about them. So I'm going to see if I can line up someone here to interview.
My name is Mark Bergner. I'm with SKS USA, and you're at the SKS Germany booth right now. We're just going to show you guys a little bit today about our Puro road pump. It's really a nice pump. It starts off, it's really cylindrical shaped, like kind of like a baton like you'd run with. Mm-hmm. What's nice about our Puro road pump, it goes to 144 PSI, but it reaches road bike pressures pretty easily. It's nice and clean. Everything's made in Germany. The cool part is it has the head pops up like a like lipstick or like chapstick. So it pops up and it's a press to valve only. It has a little rubber seal on the top so that it keeps the mud out. So you twist it up for the head, put it on. And also inside, there's a lot going on with the German engineering.
Okay.
Inside, there is a pressure gauge that shows the PSI.
Ah.
What happens is as you inflate, this little rubber O-ring goes up inside the inner tube so you can tell what pressure you're at. So you just put it on and go. And also, you can throw it in your pack or put it on your water bottle cage, and you're ready to go.
So, Mark, you wouldn't need to keep a pressure gauge with this. It's basically built into the pump itself.
That's right, solid one. That's a German
cool.
Kind of over-engineering sometimes.
Yeah. And I notice you have a couple different models of this. Is there a carbon wrap, or is that a different pump?
For the road, yeah, there's three different models. You're right. This was kind of a deep black, kind of a metallic black color
with a rubber casing.
Yeah, it's a composite pump. There's also an aluminum version. Then there's also a carbon version. So there's three different styles, Rex.
And retail price points?
Yeah, it starts off at $25 and $29, and then the carbon one is $45.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, great. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So it sounds like a pretty cool little pump. Go ahead and check it out. I've got a link in the show notes at www.thefredcast.com. And as always, thanks, Rex, for a great interview. Well, next up, I've got an interview with Al Painter from Integrate Performance Fitness, who was recommended to me by a number of friends and Fredcast listeners as somebody who could give me some advice on some additional things I could do in the off season besides just riding my CompuTrainer in my basement, specifically about strength training, something that a lot of cyclists don't necessarily think about. And if they do, according to Al, something that a lot of cyclists do incorrectly. So here's our interview with Al Painter from Integrate Performance Fitness. It's got a lot of great information. I enjoyed the interview. I think you will too. I'm talking to Al Painter from Integrate Fitness. Al, welcome to the Fredcast.
Thank you very much, David. I appreciate it.
Hey, it's great to have you here. Tell everybody a little bit about your qualifications and also a little bit about IntegrateFitness.com.
Well, I've been riding a bike for a really long time, and probably about 10 years. Did a little bit of racing the last 4 years. And we also work with folks in team and training, people who have raced in Europe on the road and mountain bike, pro 1-2s here, century riders, triathletes, and essentially anybody who wants to get on a bike and have a better experience. As far as my qualifications go, I am a National Academy of Sports Medicine certified trainer. They're performance enhancement specialist and certified personal trainer. I've owned Integrate Performance Fitness for about 2 years, and I've been strength conditioning coach for baseball academies, cycling coaches. I consult with the NorCal High School Mountain Bike League. I also get to instruct at their clinics too, which is always a lot of fun. And I am the head coach for the Santa Clara University cycling team.
So tell everybody where you guys are located as well.
We are in Mountain View, California, which is about 35 minutes south of San Francisco.
Okay, great. And it sounds like you consult with people not only in person, but also virtually as well.
Correct. Yeah, we have a lot of people who have homework programs with us, either online or they come in, we shoot a session for them and get pictures put together, and we send them out a Word doc with their pictures and their exercises. So it's not a generic template thing. It's personalized. So when the looks of pain are coming through, it's yours, and it's kind of fun.
Absolutely. Now, the reason why we're talking today is because we want to talk a little bit about strength training for cyclists. And I'm going to be honest with you. The last time I was in a weight room was probably when I was playing football in high school. Tell me just briefly how I can benefit from strength training as a cyclist.
Well, it's going to help you with everything you do after you clip in. From just basically turning over a higher cadence with more comfort and efficiency to going uphill better, descending better, cornering better. If you do it in the saddle, it's going to help. A lot of people don't do that. What they do is they ride, and they think, okay, well, I'm going to get faster, and I'll ride. Well, riding is a repetitive stress motion, and most people spend a lot of time behind a desk all day long typing, which will shorten muscles that can cause low back pain. And what you will then do is over the course of a long ride, you do more repetitive stress motions of shortened muscles, shortening them even more, which will degrade your performance. So the key is for single leg hip stability. Since you ride a bike, you spend most of your time producing power and strength with one leg. It is critical that you have good balance on a single leg and strength as well.
So, you hit on a couple of my hot buttons there. So let's just start with the first one, low back pain. A lot of times, the advice that we hear is get a good bike fit, get good core strength. But it sounds like you've got some other ideas in that regard as well.
Yes, a bike fit is a good place to start. But a fitting won't cure you. You might get adjusted on your bike, but if you've got muscle imbalances, that are pulling your joints out of alignment, then it's not going to do you any good because your body's going to go right back to where it was, and you might feel good for a little while. But more times than not, if you've got severe muscle imbalances, that sitting's not going to help.
So what kind of exercises then do you recommend to people when they come to you and they complain about things like low back pain, knee pain, hip pain, things like that?
Well, we put them through a pretty comprehensive evaluation, and we find out where their flexibility is or isn't, where their strength is or isn't, and we're pretty much looking at their posture, because without proper posture, you can't really do much, because a body in proper alignment is always going to move better. So what we'll do is, depending on what we see and the severity of the body and the muscle imbalances and whatnot, we'll start with something as fundamental as single leg or two leg bridges lying down on the floor, which is kind of a staple in physical therapy for knee rehab. We will also then have them do single leg squats if their knees will allow us to do that without discomfort. We will do lunges all over the place, every way we can think of, just to open up the hip. Because that's one of the things that happens when you ride a bike. You only move in one plane of motion. So you're not going to your left or to your right the way somebody who plays basketball would, or a volleyball player. You're moving in one direction, so you have to be able to open up hips. And that's probably one of the biggest things that we do, is just open up people's hips. And I think that's one of the best places for people to start with a stability ball. Very basic. A lot of people want to go too fast too soon. And just like cycling, if you start doing your short hill sprints and everything else without laying down the foundation work, you're going to do more harm than good. So we always start people really basic, and we progress them as we move along. And what we do is take them through 20-week phases of mobility training to get their joints to move with a better range of motion. We'll then do stability training. Now that they've got better range of motion, we can make their joints more stable. We will then go through a strength phase, because they're more mobile, more stable, we can make them stronger. And then we'll do a little bit of a size phase, which terrifies most cyclists, but it's okay to have a little bit of muscle. And then after that, we'll go through a power phase. That way we're wrapping up everything that their body needs to do, and then they get on their bike, and the times go down, the power meters go up. We hear a lot more, "Oh, I finally PR'd old La Honda," and that kind of thing, and then they have a lot more fun.
One of the things that you mentioned was that you do an evaluation of your clients, but since some of your clients are remote, how do you do that?
Well, there's simple tests that people can do. For instance, if you lie down on your back and you bend your knees to a 90-degree angle with your feet on the floor, so you have a 90-degree angle from your ankle to your hip, you raise your hips in the air, pushing your feet through the floor. Now, as you're holding yourself up, you extend a leg. And if your hamstrings feel like they're going to explode and cramp up, that's a red flag. What that means is your butt muscles aren't working, and it's called sleepy butt syndrome. So that means your brain isn't talking to your glutes, which are pretty much the big hitters in the lower body that you need to have to carry you for distance or power or strength or whatever. And that is an area that is pretty easy to determine if there's something going on. And then we'll have people do their squatting motions with a single leg. And if they don't feel anything in their glutes, if it's all quads or calves or hamstrings, then we also know that something else is going on. And, you know, we're with them with the emails and the phone calls, and we can very easily walk somebody through something over the phone.
Now, how do people fit in? I mean, we're all busy people, as you said. You know, I mean, I've got a day job, but yes, I'm one of those people sitting behind a desk typing all day, you know, and then I get on my bike in the evenings or afternoons, or maybe even at lunchtime. How do you recommend to people that they fit their strength training in along with actually being on the bike and doing the aerobic training and the power training that they're so used to doing?
You can get by the half hour twice a week, and really push-ups, single leg squats, and lunges are really the staples for endurance athletes who don't have time. I mean, anybody can do push-ups anywhere. Anybody can do a single leg squat anywhere, and anybody can do a lunge anywhere. Again, you know, if the doctor says it's okay for the joints to do so. So, you know, a couple, 4 sets of 10 of push-ups or single leg squats or lunges, and 10, 15 minutes, maybe 20, and you can put together a pretty good workout, and it'll put you in a pretty good lather, and you'll be a lot better off than you were prior to doing it. We do that actually before our Power Peloton indoor cycling class. We'll have people do single leg squats in very uncomfortable ways to wake up their butt muscles, so when they get on their bikes and they're ready to go when the class starts, they are much better off.
Yeah, because if there's one complaint that I hear more often than not in emails and voicemails, and anytime I meet a listener, they'll always tell me, you know, that they've got some physical problem that is limiting their time on the bike. Again, whether it's low back pain, hip pain, or knee pain, those are probably the three things that I hear about the most. And I know when I was having knee pain, at least for me, number one, the bike fit helped, but number two, getting with a physical therapist who said, if you do these exercises, if you do these stretches, if you strengthen these muscles, your knee pain is going to go away. And that's exactly what happened. So your advice, at least in my experience, is spot on.
Yeah, and I had knee surgery in August of 2005, and I didn't really have much work done to the muscles around the knee during physical therapy. What would happen was I would go in there, and an extremely sadistic therapist would absolutely destroy my hip muscles to the point where when it was time to get off the table, my legs would barely hold me up. But what that did was it gave the foundation of support for my knees to be happy. So at the studio, we got a saying that sad butts make for happy knees. And more times than not, when we have people come in with knee pain, if we do work in their glutes, the deep glute muscles, not the beach muscles you see, but the really deep glute muscles and the piriformis, the glute medius, and the glute minimus right around the ball and socket joint of the hip, more times than not, unless there's structural damage, a tear of some sorts, you can eliminate joint pain. And let me reiterate that. Without structural damage, more times than not, you can eliminate joint pain just by balancing the muscles in the hips. You can get tenderness in the base of your neck and behind your eyes. So if folks who have headaches behind their eyes on a regular basis and tenderness at the base of their neck, that's a postural distortion syndrome coming from the low back being either in hyperextended state or the spinal column rotated or something to that extent. You can get finger pain from your low back altering the way your shoulders move, altering the joint angles of your elbow, altering the way your wrists move, which will then manifest itself in finger pain. More times than not, unless you've had an acute injury, where you feel pain isn't the origin of the problem. It's usually coming from somewhere else. It's just manifesting itself in a different area.
Al, real quick before we wrap up, what would you say are some of the biggest mistakes you've seen cyclists make when they start thinking about strength training?
They go to a bodybuilder program. And it's funny, cyclists are terrified about putting on weight unless you're a track person. More times than not, in fact, there's a guy I was working with, he won some state titles on the track and some national titles on the track. And he came to me and he said, hey, I'm getting too big and I'm freaking out about it. And I can't climb as well and everything else. I said, well, don't you ride on the track? Well, who cares if you can't climb? You're a track rider. But people go after what's called isolation exercises. So they'll do a leg press. They'll do a knee extension. They'll do a hamstring curl. And your body isn't moved or shouldn't move in isolated fashions. It's not designed to move in an isolated fashion. It's designed to move in an integrated way with every joint being supported at your core. When you brush your teeth, if you use your left arm, the lower right-hand corner of your abdomen stabilizes your left shoulder to move the toothbrush around your mouth and vice versa. So cyclists who don't want to put on size have programs rooted in bodybuilding, which doesn't make much sense. Plus, when you're on your bike, when are you pushing your legs up at a 45-degree angle? When are you face down, bringing your heel closer to your butt as you've crashed? And when are you seated, extending your leg and straightening out your knee? One of the things that will do is it creates dumb muscles. It disconnects the brain from the stabilizers in the spinal column. Anytime you sit down, there's 40% more pressure in your spine, according to Mel Siff and his book, Super Workout, I believe. And you can drive that number up to 90%+ by sitting down and exercising. And really, when do you sit down to lift a weight? Anytime you lift in a weight, your kids, or if you're a good husband, the laundry and everything else, you go down and do a squat and you come up. and you're not being supported by anything other than you. And you see a lot of people who do these machine-based seated exercise programs, they'll get aches and pains that other people don't. And one of the reasons is that your plane of motion is dictated by that machine. And you can't do that to your body over time, or else you develop what's called pattern overload. And that destroys soft tissue, ligaments, cartilage, tendons around the joints, and it makes it a lot harder for your body to stabilize itself. It also has been proven, there was a study done with Eastern European powerlifters. They had them do a bench press and 100 reps. And in those 100 reps, not one rep moved in the same plane of motion twice. Your body needs that three-dimensional freedom to move, which is kind of one of the tricky things about riding a bike. You're supported the entire time, so it's very easy for your body to kind of get a little bit lazy with the way it supports itself. So they just get too crazy. They'll see something in a magazine or on a website, and people go and do it. You get people saying, oh, I want to do plyometrics. I want to get faster. But yet they can't stand on a single leg for more than 10 seconds without wanting to fall over because their bodies can't support themselves. So if you go and you do plyometrics with joints that aren't stable, what happens is you're shooting a cannon from a canoe. You can only exhibit the amount of power that your joint stability will allow. And power taps don't measure power. And before your listeners freak out and say, well, wow, I spent all this money on my power tap. What do you mean I'm not measuring power? You're measuring the exhibition of power based on your joint stability. So someone does a 1,500-plus watt sprint, their body is stable enough to produce 1,500 watts of power. Anybody who can't produce that much, but they feel like they're producing that many watts when they're sprinting, their body's not stable enough. So the more stable you are, the more power you're going to get. The more stable you aren't, your body leaks power when you try to exhibit it, and it will always go after the weakest joint. So typically that's a low back area, that's a knee, that's a shoulder, that's a neck. So wherever your body is the weakest, where its kinetic chain of support structure and stability is, that's where your body's going to get injured.
So bottom line, if you want to become a more stable, a better power producer on your bike, if you want to have less pain in your joints, strength training is the key, but making sure that you are not going after the Arnold Schwarzenegger look. Instead, you're doing it right, and you're using somebody who understands the mechanics of cycling. I'll tell everybody once again how they can find Integrate Performance Fitness and how they can get more information from you.
They can find us at www.integratefitness.com. They can also send an email to al@integratefitness.com. And we also have something coming up Thursday evening at 6:30 p.m. in our facility. If you are in the San Francisco Bay Area, we are having the second round of our Integrate 100 Century program. And it's a pretty cool thing because we combine core strength with intense cycling skills with relatively intense training, and our motto is 65 equals 100 because we get people to ride 65 miles as hard as they can, which makes their century pace at a more moderate level much more enjoyable. It's a 12-week program, and it's a lot of fun. Our instructors come from racing backgrounds and century backgrounds, and it's a great time, and we're very much looking forward to it. This year benefits tripsforkids.org. through our relationship with the Plus 3 Network, and all you have to do is get on your bike and move, and you can raise money for a great cause.
That sounds great. Al, it's been great having you on the Fredcast, and we will talk to you again soon.
Thank you very much, David. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on the show.
It's a pleasure.
I don't know if you noticed, but Al and I really hit it off in the interview. He's actually going to be preparing a strength training program for me. We've already done our evaluation of my strength, if you will. I've got tendonitis in my shoulders, and so strength training is something that's always been difficult. Al knows about it. It was part of my assessment, and I'm really curious to see if he can find ways to help me with my shoulder pain, help me with my low back pain, and increase my strength for those climbs in the Alps, which, oh, here's a great opportunity for me to mention our trip in the Alps. Don't forget, sign up now. Don't forget that early sign-up savings of $300 for those of you who sign up now for our tour of the Alps. Of course, links are in the show notes. And back to Al, in addition to providing a program for me, he's also going to be providing some content for thefredcast.com. So look for that in the coming days at www.thefredcast.com. In the meantime, you can contact Al. I've got his links in the show notes. Thanks to Al Painter from Integrate Performance Fitness for providing us with that great information. Now, finally tonight, you may remember the name Ken Wallace. Ken is the guy who provided the Training with Ken segments throughout most of 2009 as he got ready for the 2009 Étape du Tour. And I think a lot of you from your comments got a lot out of Ken's sort of everyman attempt at a very difficult event and his training in the run-up to the event. Ken is very passionate about cycling, and he's also very passionate about his family. And he has merged the two into a new website that he's put together called VeloKid.com. And of course, there's a link in the show notes, but it's pretty simple. It's VeloKid.com. Basically, VeloKid.com is the place, one of the few places on the internet where families and kids can learn a little bit more about cycling for kids. Tips on riding with kids, youth cycling clubs, classes, events in your area, products for kids, products that kids like, routes that are mapped and shared by kids, profile of kids who cycle, profiles of kids who cycle, and stories about families who ride with their kids. Great example, a few years ago, you know, I did that ride across California with my daughter, Emily. We still talk about it. I still hear from many of you that that was one of, those were some of your favorite episodes, were my interviews with Emily. And that is exactly the feeling that Ken is trying to capture with VeloKid.com. Go ahead and check it out. And while you're listening, here's an interview that Ken did with Liam Flanagan and his dad, Bill. Liam will tell you in this interview about some amazing things that he has done, including riding some of those very difficult cols in France and riding along with Lance Armstrong himself. As a matter of fact, you may have seen that video of Liam riding with Lance on one of those cols in France. If you haven't, I've got a link in the show notes. But in the meantime, here's Ken's interview with Liam Flanagan and his dad, Bill.
Okay, so today I'm here with two very special friends who've come over to visit. I'm here with Bill and Liam Flanagan. And Liam has been riding his bike all over the place and doing some pretty exciting things. So Liam, you know, tell us a little bit about how you got interested in cycling and what you've been doing.
Well, I got interested in cycling because of my dad. When we went to follow the Tour de France, he climbed all the climbs that the Tour de France was doing, and that inspired me to start biking with him. And I've been doing a lot of the rides that, and this year we did a lot of the climbs again that my dad did, except for I did them with him, so. That was cool.
And I heard a story that you met some pretty interesting people when you were out there doing some of those climbs.
Yeah, we met a couple French reporters. We met Lance, and we just recently met Levi Leipheimer.
Where'd you meet Levi at?
The Grand Fondo.
At the Grand Fondo. So what ride did you do at the Grand Fondo? How was that?
It was the Medio, the 65-mile ride, and it was really hard. There was this one hill that was like 15 to 20% grade all the way up, so.
Wow, it's exciting.
How'd you do on that hill? Tell him about it.
Well, he says that I did great. I'm not sure, but they said that they were going to time trial it, but they couldn't do that because of their insurance that they had, so.
We don't have your time sweat, but it was fast. I was on the limit just trying to keep up with him. So he hit the hill, and I think maybe all those roads in France, he was really going pretty good.
So is there anything special that you guys do to train? Is it, you know, it's not every day you see, you're 9 years old, right, Liam?
Yeah.
Not every day you see a 9-year old out there climbing climbs and riding with Levi and Lance. Do you do any kind of special training, or do you just get out there and ride your bike a lot?
Not exactly special training. Just like to go on different rides.
So you're not on any kind of a special training program where you have to do so many miles every day or anything like that?
No.
Your dad's not doing lactate threshold testing or anything, huh?
We haven't gotten there yet.
Good. Keep it fun.
Yeah, we keep it fun. As long as, you know, my thing is if Liam's having fun, then we're doing it. If, you know, if it stops to be fun, then, you know. But he, you know, the training, we'll tell him what we do on the what basically we've been doing on the weekends.
Well, on the weekends, we've been doing like 20, 30-mile rides. Sometimes we'll do like a 45-mile ride, but it's usually like we're doing like 35-mile rides is like what we've been doing on the weekend.
Both days, Saturday and Sunday, like 35 miles each day?
Usually I'll take a little, because I have swimming on Saturday, so I usually do most of the riding on Sunday.
Cool. So you think, do you have any plans for the future and what you want to do with cycling, or is it just something fun for now that you like doing?
Yeah, I guess I have, I just like it right now, and I really like it, and I wish I could get to the Tour de France.
Someday, yeah.
Cool.
Well, you certainly, I think, inspire a lot of people. I know my son, who you've come to visit today, and we're going to go for a little ride, he was really inspired by seeing your video, and he wanted to ride like you, so we got him a bike, and we're going to go out and go for a ride with you. I know that's going to be a lot of fun. And do you have a lot of people telling you that you made their sons or daughters want to go out and ride their bikes?
Yeah, a lot of people say that, and it's kind of cool that they say that. It makes me feel really good, and it's a little bit like, it makes me feel great, and it makes me feel like I need to keep biking and support Live Strong and the people that are fighting cancer. So that's what I think inspired most of the people, because I'm trying to fight the cancer of a lot of other people. So, yeah.
Well, it's a really good cause, and I know you're planning to go out to Austin at the end of the month and ride the Live Strong ride as well, right?
Live Strong Challenge.
That's great. Well, it's been great meeting you, and you too, Bill. And I thank you guys for coming up and visiting with us and having lunch. And I'm looking forward to going out on a little ride with you now.
Well, I don't know about you, but that Liam kid is awesome. Bill, you are doing a great job raising an amazing young man. Good for him, not only for the riding that he does, which is admirable in and of itself for a guy of his age, but also for his commitment to Live Strong and to, as he said, fighting the cancer. What a fantastic young man. And Ken, thank you so much for bringing that interview to us. And we hope you'll all go check out VeloKid.com. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Fredcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Audible for sponsoring the Fredcast at audiblepodcast.com/cycling. Thank you to you for your donations and for signing up for our tour of the French Alps, August 21st through the 28th. Go to vivatravels.com for more information on that. And thank you also for clicking all those links on the Fredcast.com, including the newest one up there for the Epic Ride DVDs, Epic Vermont, Epic Acadia, and the rest. You will thank me for telling you about those just gorgeous videos. Definitely helps you avoid trainer boredom. Hey, to stay in contact with the Fredcast, one of the best ways is to follow me on Twitter, and that's at twitter.com/Fredcast. Of course, you can send me an email or an audio comment anytime to thefredcast@gmail.com. And don't forget our new Fredcast listener hotline, area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. And visit the website anytime at www.thefredcast.com. Well, before we go, it is time for our weekly PodSafe cycling music. Tonight's music comes to us from the IOTA PromoNet at IOTA, IODA, PromoNet, PromoNet.com. Tonight's music is from the band called The Mother Hips. It's called One Way Out, and there are links in the show notes to where you can find the Mother Hips website and also to where you can buy the song on iTunes. We'll be back again in a short while with another episode of the Fredcast. In the meantime, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.
Broke down for the first time. It's a long way to the next town. It's a hot day and I wish I was down in the cool breeze of a beach town. There's only one way, but I'm trying to figure it out. Tell me there's one way out, but we'll see about that. Now the water's got to flow down. If it stops, then you've got a problem. Well, we've all got time comes, are you gonna know how? There's only one way out, but I'm looking for another route. Tell me there's one way out, but we'll see to figure it out.